Okay. Testing 1, 2. Oh, sounds like I'm on. All right. So, welcome. My name is Pat Lee. I work in the Clark County Parks and Lands Division. And this is Steve Dew. He's with Conservation Techniques, who's been a consultant that's been assisting us on this project. And we'll kind of split the presentation. Last Wednesday, we gave this presentation to council, and they really didn't have a lot of comments on it. So it didn't seem like I needed to revise it too much for this meeting. So you'll have to apologize to me for not changing the date on it. And anyway, the master plan really got initiated last August with a work session before council. They really didn't have too many comments at that time. One was really the focus was on concerns about funding the farm, since it is a general fund at this point. And so they wanted us to find ways to try and gradually reduce the general fund commitment to the property. There is an old silo that was imported from another site elsewhere in the county that was brought to the farm, I think, about 2010. That's in bad shape, and council advised us not to reconstruct that this time around. It is not one of the historical attributes of the farm. After the board work session and procurement to get Steve on board, we met to discuss approaches for public engagement with the farm advisory team. Farm advisory team is made up of the farm advisory committee or board, which reviews all proposals for use of the farm for consistency with the vision and guiding principles. It also includes the Friends of the Farm Foundation, which was the 501c3 nonprofit that was set up, I believe, just a year ago to try and find ways to provide more resources for the farm. And also some of the larger stakeholders at the farm, including Washington State University Extension, Clark County Food Bank, and others. So they helped us. You can probably go on. I'm sorry. I'm used to clicking it myself. And we're really here to review changes that have had at the farm to date, validate or revise plan elements within the guiding principles, and review farm priorities to see if they are the same as they were back in 2010 when the plan was adopted. The guiding principles for the master plan, go to the next slide, please. They were developed for the plan in 2010 and continue to provide direction for decisions about farm use. So you certainly want to celebrate our agriculture heritage, maintain WSU's presence through programs, promote sustainable agricultural and building practices, support agricultural research, enhance community wellness, and promote community volunteerism, and open up additional public access opportunities at the farm. Next slide. Again, that was the guidance from the council, which I've already reviewed. Next slide. So some of the major changes since I should point them out on the belt if you can. Expansion of Hazeldale Park, which was initially proposed up in this area,
boundary line adjustment, and instead of 5 acres expanding northward, we're 5 acres along the Northeast 68th Street as far as the expansion of Hilldale Park. What that did to give us this master plan, it called for a facility known as a community learning center. That had a couple of aspects to it. One, at that time, there was a need for a community meeting space in the area. Since that time, Luke Jensen Sports Park has the Bud Van Cleef Community Room for years, and that really fulfilled that need. And other uses, programming, classrooms, things like that, we felt probably could be accommodated elsewhere on the property up here. And there will be a separate master planning process for Hazeldale Community Park expansion that has not yet begun yet. So that was a significant change. You have the cemetery, which is up in this area. In the existing plan, you can see it sort of tails like that. We actually did a remote sensing study, determined that the boundary actually extends out further to the east. So we put up a cedar rail fence around it to demarcate the cemetery. We've had a new high tunnel built by WSU here, a new greenhouse built sort of a combination of master composter and master gardeners here, and the living farm, which was supposed to be a residence that would demonstrate green building practices, actually was purchased on another site. Habitat Humanity helped construct it and was sold to a current resident, I believe. So there's no need for that particular facility there. So those are some of the major. The other major one, which you'll notice, is that in 2010, the master plan trail system sort of wandered all over the farm. A lot of that was to try and make sure we could retain an accessible trail in terms of slopes and things like that, and also get to various interpretive sites. So that has been redefined, where the trail at this point is proposed to be largely on the perimeter, avoiding sensitive wetlands and trying to still access the various historic features on the farm. The main reason for that is so not to conflict with the agricultural operations that are ongoing on the property. So that is kind of a rundown of some of the major changes.
Next slide. Sort of, there was a variety of user groups that use the farm. There's actually a map showing current uses, where some of these fields and things are located, run by these organizations. Next slide. The interpretive trail plan was developed in 2011, and it provides six thematic clusters around which to develop the interpretive trail. Including sort of the history of the farm from the pioneer days, its time as the Clark County Poor Farm, its time as the Washington State University Agricultural Experiment Station, and also interpreting the historic features like some of the historic structures and historic cemetery, et cetera. So those are sort of the theme clusters that were called out in that. And we hope to build pride in the community's past, present, and future, and provide a nice access opportunity and learning opportunity for people that will use the trail. Next slide.
So is the trail system in place now, or is that future state?
It is not in. That's a future. Yeah.
So none of the trails in place?
No, none of the trail is in place. Really, access is quite limited to the 78th Street side. At this point, certainly you can access community gardens. If you're a volunteer working with some of the nonprofit organizations out there, you can access that, but there's not free access around the property at this point. And why don't you go to the next slide? Sort of some of the public engagements that we went through, in addition to working with the farm ad advisory team to scope the survey questionnaire, which was online between mid-January and mid-March. We got about 795 responses to the online survey, and Steve will run through some of the themes in that survey later on. We had a first community meeting to get ideas from people on January 31st, second meeting on April 10th, and in between we had a couple more meetings of the farm advisory team. Periodically we send out email blasts announcing and social media posts announcing that these meetings were going, and you know, we'd like your input in helping us plan out the future of the farm. Next slide. Steve.
All right. Good evening, everybody. So I'll just highlight some of the survey responses just to give you a little context about what the public was saying with regard to Heritage Farm and how that information helped inform some changes to the site master plan. So the online survey really sought to get input on preferences and priorities for farm use and future programming. So there were a series of different types of questions that talked to farm and garden uses, educational programming, and potential business development and revenue-generating ideas, again, with the intent that the farm at some future date be more self-sufficient than it is today. So with regard to farm and garden priorities, this quick chart just gives you a sense of what folks were saying in terms of things they saw as high priorities. And you can see that expanding partnerships with WSU for nutrition and gardening classes ranked very high, as did demonstrations for composting techniques and enhancing water quality linked to Cougar Creek, which this site has the headwaters of Cougar Creek on it. Next.
Excuse me. So this was an online?
This was an online-only survey.
Okay. How many people participated?
795 responded.
That's what this was.
Yeah. Okay. And again, it was online live for 2 months. So with regard to business development ideas, some form of marketing for farm produce was a priority for generating operating funds on site. And that included things like a farmer's market, produce stand, specialty farm-related events. Those ranked at the top, as did the strong interest for an incubator or startup space for new farmers. So the idea that you would have some classroom space or something to partner with WSU or others to help promote farming techniques and farmer education. One thing to note on this chart is on the other end of the spectrum, which is the thing that got the least favorite response, and that is leasing additional land or leasing land on site for commercial crop production. So there was very little public support for that notion. And the intent really is to keep the farm more or less as it is with the variety of partners that it has and expand its uses going forward. For educational priorities, you can see that there aren't any clear priorities. There's a lot of things of interest. The top seven there actually are all within a really close range of each other in terms of relative support. Excuse me. But what this shows is a reaffirmation of some of the existing programs that are currently on site with site partners and the interest in expanding some of those programs for research and additional youth engagement. This chart does show that the trail that was discussed by Pat is also a feature that's strongly supported. So the master plan update really aims to acknowledge the changes that have happened on site that Pat noted, but also plan for future improvements. And this process really builds from the process that started in 2010. And this graphic simply represents those high-level land use zones, so to speak, that would occur on site. And you can see underneath the kind of the bubble section, the original 2010 graphic. And you can see in there, in particular, the variety of trails that cut through that cut through the property. And the 2010 master plan, in some regards, created a farm park plan, whereas the intent then was to enable a lot of public access and access for vistas and usage of the site, whereas the current master plan update that we've got really builds on the notion of the fact that this is more of a working farm that has history and heritage, and that there should be some segregation between the public use and public space and the farm activities. So in particular, the loop trail is now pushed to the edges, and it's outlined in kind of that magenta color. So the idea is to push it to the sides, leave the core central area of the farm open for farm production, and also to avoid conflicts between those who are there to walk or pass through the site and those who are there to farm farm and grow things on the property. The northern section in blue is the area of high intensity. It's the area that has all of the existing infrastructure and the area where future infrastructure would be proposed. And the area in green is a wetland restoration area that reflects current wetland setbacks that exist on site and accommodates future expansion of a wetland mitigation area if additional improvements were put in that upper area in the blue. Next. So this is the proposed master plan, and again, it really conforms to the graphic you just saw in terms of the locations of the various core amenities. It does remove the silo that Pat mentioned earlier, in addition to the living farm demonstration, excuse me, and the community learning center. So those things were taken out, and again, the major shift is with the realignment of the trail. So just zooming into the northern section, that high-intensity area, again, this is the area where future infrastructure improvements would occur, and it's the area where existing infrastructure is. So in the northwest corner, there's new parking near the administrative building, and what is proposed is a expansion of the drive to the east to a future building, which would be a flexible space. It could accommodate classes, could accommodate food storage, food prep, maybe produce, sales, farmers market. It's intended to be a flexible, a bit amorphous sort of space at this point, given that it's a master plan. A lot of additional, you know, thought needs to get put in place in terms of future programming and funding and the rest. But the intent here is really to set aside a space for a future building if one is needed. With that would come additional parking and potentially pushing out to the east a road access point to align with a curb cut and a street that crosses 78th on the north side, and potentially align that at a future date if there's demand, if there's willingness on the adjacent owners, adjacent property owners' usage and the like. Next. So the master plan really aims to be consistent with and in alignment with the public comment that we heard during the process. So the open house feedback and the survey input really just reinforced the farm's direction in the sense to maintain and expand farming on the site and existing garden uses, potentially expand greenhouses as demand increases, potentially provide for additional community garden plots, and also provide for the potential for infrastructure to support a farmer's market or produce stand or on-site classes for farmers. Thanks. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that the... Oh, yeah, we're good. You're there. All right. Again, improving water quality was something that ranked highly in the survey, and it would be consistent with the proposed master plan. Again, utilizing that space between the high intensity area on the north side of the property and the active farm use in the core section of the site, there's opportunities to enhance or improve wetlands between those two core uses, provide for additional interpretive elements, and potentially have an additional boardwalk element that enables people to pass through sensitively to see the different types of landscapes that are on the property. And again, it's a historic farm, and it's a working farm, and as Pat noted, there's the interpretive trail plan that will guide where and what types of information gets interpreted on site. And the nodes that are placed around on the master plan represent those sites that could be beneficial for interpretation, whether it's the cemetery or a vista or some active use on the farm in terms of types of crops, types of crops that are grown. So this plan really tries to align with that interpretive trail plan. So obviously the master plan as proposed is not something that can get implemented all at one shot. A phased approach would be necessary, and funding and the demand for different elements would need to be thought through as time goes by with various partners to make sure that the site grows at a reasonable clip, but at a clip that's sustainable and affordable.
Okay, thank you, Steve. So, what can we do financially? And so we've outlined a few steps that we think are a good sequence. One thing, you have a lot of volunteers at the farm, you have many people that are passionate about the farm, but relative to the county population, it's relatively unknown. So we think getting some additional public access facilities out there, like the trail, et cetera, would really increase the visibility of the farm and the patronage of programs and special events that may be staged there at some point in the future. And to get them out there, I think we need to continue to increase our activity in social media to try and engage folks when there is more to for people to enjoy out there at this point in time. I think the social benefit provided the organizations active out there, including Clark County. Most of the produce goes to the Clark County Food Bank, that we produce each year. And that's distributed through their network to many families in need of fresh crops throughout the year. And you also have veterans groups that are active out there. They have their 2-acre plot that helps them reengage the community, maybe develop some new skills. And these types of programs that are out there lend themselves, I think, to various grant and foundation support. So we would look to expand that. And we may need to take a look at our lease provisions and fee structures. Right now, our costs our lease rates are pretty minimal, $75 an acre a year. So if you're leasing 10 acres of land, it's $750. So it's a very low rate, but that recognizes the social benefit being provided by these organizations. But it may be appropriate to move forward with some sort of graduated structure with sort of a base level of support provided by the council and the county in the lease arrangements, but then for some of those more intensive periods when we only have one person that staffs that site out there, when things are fairly intense, be it the Mother's Day plant sale that's coming up, or be it planting season or harvest season on down the line, maybe we try to recoup a little more with a graduated structure at that time to try and at least compensate for the time that's being spent out there.
How many acres are available for lease?
Well, the site itself probably is, the site itself is about almost 80 acres, I believe. And I think probably about 30 are leased or being used at the moment. So there's still quite a bit. But it's a farming situation, and the proposal process we go through that evaluates the proposals is actually a formal application process for use of the farm. The proposals are evaluated in terms of their consistency with the vision and guiding principles. Certainly volunteer support is a criteria of importance, and educational aspects are also components of importance. So none of our leases are long-term leases. And as different organizations either wish to expand or they just wanted to do a pilot program for a year or two, then we would be available to look at additional proposals for use. But at the moment, there still is room for proposals to come forward. And the Farm Advisory Team, this is Farm Advisory Committee, is actively reviewing a couple as we speak. And ultimately, we think the strong Friends of the Farm Foundation should be the primary catalyst to funding and kind of reducing the general fund support for the farm. And last year, a leadership Clark County group did a little white paper identifying many strategies that the Friends of the Farm Foundation could use to strengthen the organization and be able to invest more in the farm through their efforts. Next slide. Long term, as Steve mentioned, hosting additional special events at the farm is identified as one potential source of revenue, but events are only as good as the vendor and sponsor support you have if you are looking to at least break even or actually make a little bit of money that could be reinvested in the farm. So it would have to be very, very carefully structured any event so that that was the case. A long-term goal may be to support the foundation in building a stewardship endowment. There may be opportunities to go for some capacity-building grants through various foundations that support nonprofit organizations, and certainly kind of the uses that are currently there lend themselves to those kinds of support. And for major capital improvements such as the flexible building, probably the approach that would make the most sense is to a private-public partnership through a request for proposal process with parameters well laid out both in terms of financially and management-wise for taking care of that building and leases that are engaged or terminated or just sort of the day-to-day property management functions. And that is kind of concludes the presentation. I think we have a thank you. Comments and questions. There we go. Any comments and questions?
I got some questions.
Sure.
So what's it cost to the county to do this per year? What's the nut it takes?
Okay, there's a let me break it out in a few different ways. There is, I think, approximately $350,000 that's given to Washington State University each year. That's not necessarily tied to the farm, That's so that they have an extension program in the county. So they used to be located out at Casey Center. But we, Washington State University, consistent with the original master plan, was relocated to the farm in 2011. I think it was completed. So in that year, there was quite a bit of structural changes at the farm to accommodate the office space and things. Then you have the salaries of staff, the farm operations specialist who's out there full time, a bit of my time, and that probably runs about, I don't know, $125,000 a year. And then you have whatever is needed to maintain the physical infrastructure, which will change year by year. So, for example, this past year, we were able to have the council approve a new irrigation system that was paid with real estate excise tax funds. That's not going to happen every year, but
that's
there is going to be
expense.
That's a cap, but it's still, you know, it's
so
still,
do we have an annual budget for this thing? Do we know how much it costs the taxpayer per year to keep this thing going?
I would say,
I mean, do we
roughly each year, you're probably talking about maybe $500,000.
$500,000 for this?
Yes.
Okay. So, and for that future master plan to achieve that goal, do we know what that's going to cost to get to that?
No, we have not done cost estimates for that.
No?
No.
I didn't think anybody really put the pen to paper. Yeah. Just kind of that ideal, was it $5 million, is it $20 million? And then kind of have a target to hit. It was just kind of, you know, when we're talking about things like this. I know, in Ridgefield, we got a library we're getting ready to build. We got a thermometer on the side of the building that says we're here and we're trying to get to there. And everybody drives by and sees it every day and says, hey, that's the goal we're trying to hit. So we're all acutely aware of what we're trying to, the target we're trying to hit. And, that looks like a nice target. I'm just wondering what that's going to cost to get there. And I think if people knew that, it might help. And then maybe that public-private partnership, just to throw it out there. I mean, you talk about farmer's market, you know, put something out there. It sounds like we need to put something out there to create revenues to start making money.
Yeah, I will say.
Not looking for public funds, just look for something that's actually going to generate some cash flow.
Right. You know, I would say that one thing the council did suggest last week is that we should go cautiously on the farmer's market, because we don't want to compete with the existing farmer's market nor those farmers that are direct marketing themselves. So, that's a concern.
Have them come
there. Concern.
I
think that's what we would do.
Have them come there.
Yeah, we would
they can
have them
their
stage
own best
it
competition.
Here, and yes, that would be the way that we would, in all likelihood, set it up.
Okay, no, that's great.
So I think in that context, the idea of the incubator space for people wanting to get into agriculture perhaps is the opportunity for a revenue generator that's more than 75 acre a year opportunity, but also it would give you a place to market the product for the new people getting into the business.
That certainly may be a business consideration of someone that would want to take advantage of that. But you'd probably, I'm assuming, one of the barriers that we have to farming in Clark County is most of our farms are very small.
Sure.
And land costs to expand or even get into the business are pretty high for a small scale agricultural operation. So we'd be looking at probably a lease of some land, which would likely be not at market rate.
Correct.
It would be also potentially some room in the flex space or a stand somewhere on the farm where they could direct market. And you have sort of the educational infrastructure there. various programs run by WSU, Master Gardeners, Master Composters, all the folks that are out there that could provide sort of the educational underpinning
and
for
the support
farming.
Network for
yes,
yeah, people getting into
yes.
the business.
Yes,
right, and I guess I think of it in the terms of a limited time lease to expose them to the business. With the opportunity to say after a period of time, this looks good to me and I'm willing to invest someplace else, turning the land over for the next incubator opportunity, or it isn't what I thought it was going to be and I'm out. But it seems like we want to continue to promote small-scale agriculture in the community as that is the model that is available.
Yes.
And it's another opportunity to generate some forms of revenue.
That is, I agree. I don't think that would eliminate general funding for the programs if it was just the incubator operation.
I don't think there's anything we're going to come up with that's going to be a silver bullet to eliminate general funding for the programs. But self-sufficiency, I think, comes in staged events or steps, and much to the point of saying, how do we start? If you have a price for the interpretive trail and just say, there's your thermometer on the wall, let's get the interpretive trail built, then you got a step in there. Mm-hmm. If you're saying we want to expand the agricultural land usage and we're going to turn 10 acres over into four parcels and lease out 2.5 acre parcels, it balances a portion of the equation. Small portion of the equation, but a portion of the equation. I think it's showing incremental steps forward in
yes.
that regard. And, of course, you've already brought up the fact that, reliance on grants and other funding opportunities are going to be essential to keeping the spirit and intent of the farm intact. I think we're going to need to explore a variety of ways of using the land.
So, can I jump in here?
Sure.
Look, I think the vision is great, very admirable. What I'm concerned about is the strategies that you've got to try and deliver upon that vision. They're basically the same sorts of strategies that many, many organisations with similar type resources are facing. And you're going to move the dial, but you're going to move it so slowly that will that pace of movement be enough to manage the political forces at that time? So if you think about your needs and where you sit in the big pot of what everything is going on in Clark County, you're probably down lower in the pot for getting allocations of money. And if there was an adverse financial turn in the economy, your amount of money coming in from the county would drop considerably. And that's played out in multiple local governments across the US and wherever. What I think the plan really needs is a couple of things. You need to demonstrate what the cost of investment is, because a lot of those items that you plan to do are not really revenue generating. It's nice to say if we build an interpretive trail, we will get another 500 people through, but it's not putting money on the table. And clearly, from the information in the report and what you said tonight, the county is looking for you to try and reduce the demand on the general fund. So I think it's really worthwhile doing a section of some high-level cost estimates so you can say, look, in order to keep this vision alive, we need to look for an investment of X, Y, and Z. The good thing about that is if you then develop a marketing document about your plan and management and you have those costs in and you circulate that, you now are attracting business and they can look at it and say, okay, for a $50,000 or $100,000, there is a good marketing opportunity for us. So make the plan do some marketing work for you in terms of going out and getting sponsorship for business. The other thing I think would be very prudent to do is to make two key actions. that should be developed in conjunction with either the advisory team or preferably the foundation. Whereas within the first 12 months of adoption, you're actually developing a business plan for the site and a marketing plan. And the marketing plan should be benefits-based, because that is going to give you the biggest bang for the buck. Saying social media, so many people invest in social media and they never see the return for it. I would also think about your governance structure. It's, for want of a better term, a little clunky. It's not going to give you the agility and nimbleness to move forward. So you might want to look at your governance structure and think about how you can bring that in and what are the skills and attributes you need in that governance structure. Because it's not just necessarily the technical expertise you need to bring this into fruition. It's the sort of supporting skill sets like finance, business planning, project management, marketing. Those are the skill sets that you need, because you can move the dial on this. $500,000 a year is not a big ask. It may seem a lot, but it's not a big ask. So there are a couple of things I would suggest you do to the business or the draft plan to add value to it. And I can think that with the way small-scale agriculture, horticulture is going in the US, it's within the top 5-10 recreational demand activities. Many small tech companies are setting up, focusing around the agricultural sector. You've got the ability to do some really creative partnerships with them. And I think also if you're handing $350,000 to the Washington State University, you need to be making sure you get a return on your investment. And it would be good to set up some measures, because that could work in favour of soliciting a better cut of that price. So they're just a few ideas to throw on the table for you.
Yeah, a lot of those suggestions echo the recommendations of the leadership Clark County group as well. Yes.
And just to bounce off that, he actually mentioned horticulture. Is there, I mean, maybe you've already gone this path, but I would think maybe some of the local school districts, if they have some horticulture classes, maybe there's a way that...
Well, actually, some of the schools, help with plant starts for the farm. They come out, lots of school groups come out and help harvest the food bank fields and things like that.
Is there a way through that process to gain revenues, though, is what I'm thinking. I'm trying to figure out ways to help figure out revenue streams, because if you're reaching out to school districts saying, hey, we've got this area, we'd like you to have the students, and then maybe through that student body be able to get some funding through all the different, I don't know if that's even possible, but... I'm just thinking to help try to figure out that
just
solution.
One other thought too. In the plan, if you have got potential ideas of revenue generating strategies, call them out. So if sponsorship is one, call it out in the plan so that you give a clear signal to people that when they approve the plan, they're actually buying into that sort of strategy. Because sometimes people, when you start doing revenue generation in public open spaces, they're all with it in theory, but when you come to actually implementing it, they'll walk away and leave you high and dry. So call those specific revenue strategies out. So if it's grants, call them out. If it's sponsorship, call it out. If it's joint partnerships, call it out. If it's private-public partnerships, call it out. You don't necessarily have to then deliver upon all of them, but call those strategies out, because there's quite a bit of contention around some of them.
I was going to ask another question, too. Do you get, do they grow, like, pumpkins out there and stuff, and watermelon and all the jazz they do?
They haven't done pumpkins or watermelons yet, no.
See, they need to do that, and then October, you can have, like, an Oktoberfest, and then you can shoot those pumpkins, get a big cannon and shoot them, and get people to come all over the state to do the pumpkin shoot. They do that down in a little town down in Texas. They're known for they sell more pumpkins out of that little town, down a little town down there by my wife's shop, and Floyd into Texas. They have like the pumpkin capital of the United States. And you get a big cannon and shoot pumpkins. And then you slingshot, and you could have war. You know, you can do things like out there.
The key is
to get people out there and have some fun.
In order to grow the program, everyone involved has to be continually thinking what they're doing is how they're going to generate revenue through whatever it is they're doing, right? As opposed to, okay, this is a public.
Or just our
facility. Y'all pay $10 a pumpkin to shoot a pumpkin, and I'll help build a pumpkin shooter. Come on, let's do it. There's some generating.
That would be a good project.
I don't know if you'd make a $500,000, but I'll take a little bite out of it.
I have a girl rubber. Their next class could
watermelons in the spring. Pumpkins in the fall, watermelons in the spring. Come on. Man. Yeah. You could have zucchini day. Come on, shoot zucchinis.
Yeah. Never a shortage of those.
Yeah, we get some bad out there.
Boom! You got to freeze them first.
Oh, yeah. It's a connection to herbicides. No, I mean, you got a lot of land out there, a lot of fun
stuff. Frozen watermelons.
And just in the city of Ridgefield, Ron, I don't know if you know Ron Onslow, the old mayor of Ridgefield.
I know.
That guy, I got to tell you, he built, I don't know how many miles of trail in the city of Ridgefield with all volunteers and getting it done. And I don't know, you know, maybe you have to get a hold of Ron, tell him you need some trails built. He's really good at getting trails built.
Yep. We have some people that, some groups that have worked to build trails in our parks, and, you know, we would certainly invite them to participate here at the farm as well.
Well, you let me know when you're building trails, and I'll come out and help. So we'll bring the whole world up.
Very good.
I think it's great. I think it's cool.
Yeah,
I've always liked that piece of property. I always drive by it, wondering what's going on out there. So I think it's really neat. So
all right,
that is it's about awareness, right? Because I was in Leadership Clark County. We did a project on the poor farm.
Yeah,
was what our project was about, and you know, the food bank. So there was a lot I didn't know.
Did you do a lot of investigating on meat? Is that what you're doing?
Yes.
On the poor farm.
Yeah. Your backyard.
My backyard.
Yes?
I was wondering, you mentioned that you wanted to support sustainable farming practices on the farm as part of your vision. I was wondering, what are the efforts already being made to do that currently? And then how, if you know, you'd like to expand on that in the future?
Well, there's a few groups out there. For example, the Master Gardeners, they have a small, but they use organic methods as a demonstration method. We have the Master Composters out there. They have a demonstration site as well in terms of composting. There is classes that WSU puts on, living on small acreage and things like that, which talks about how do you ensure that you're working as in concert with the land that you own as possible. So there are programs that are ongoing that are out there that sort of have that built to them.
There's two things on my mind. One is that there could be maybe runoff if they're using pesticides or fertilizers into the wetlands, and I'm wondering if that could create toxicity or pollution to the animals that inhabit that wetland. I was wondering if you ever had done research on that or if you knew about that in particular.
I know that our clean water group is looking at a project along the creek corridor. I think at least on their capital program, it's 2021, I think, is the program date to try and do some sort of restoration for those that have been out to the farm. It's pretty much a straight ditch now that goes from, you know, the east property line over to the west property line almost, and then it seems it takes a right angle and goes under a culvert under 78th. So they're looking at a project to try and enhance that area in a couple of years.
Enhance the restoration or enhance the watershed cleanliness?
The new parking lot, that was actually supported by a grant from the Department of Ecology, and it demonstrates various pervious parking techniques in just west of the main building.
So the public hearing's in 2 weeks. This is really a session for staff to have a conversation with council. If you want to ask questions in 2 weeks at the public hearing, would probably be the most appropriate venue to answer them. Ask
or
those.
Provide written
comments,
and testimony
beforehand.
Oh, okay,
that could be addressed.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's all right. You can ask one more question.
I Are you sure?
Yeah.
I don't know if you want
I'm
me to
open chair.
This
I can,
one.
I can authorize it. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
And then come in 2 weeks and give us your presentation at the hearing. This is not a hearing, and so we're not taking public testimony, but I'm kind of interested in what other question you might have. So.
Well, it's not really a question. It's more of, well, it's a question about whether you're looking into this already. But it's just something to bring up into people's consciousness at this time. We all might be aware of and should be looking into the fact that climate change is on the rise, and there's climate change disasters on the rise, climate change events happening. And I'm really interested to see that farm spaces are used as areas that can not only help with farming, but also create biodiversity that would help with climate resilience for these climate change events. So I'll keep it there. Keep it
okay,
simple.
Okay, well, I would encourage you to come to the hearing in 2 weeks or mm-hmm. submit written comments.
Okay.
That's where we'll take the testimony and consider it in our deliberations and pass it on up to the Board of County Councilors who ultimately makes the decisions and makes recommendations.
And the earlier that you get it in, the better we have a chance to digest it before the hearing.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
I'll step away.
So, based on the council's suggestions, was there any urgency in their emphasis towards the revenue generation, or was it just a generalized suggestion, which I think we've heard for the last decade or so concerning this property?
I would say that... And I really can't speak for the council on this, but my read of our discussion during the work session is that they definitely want to show us making incremental progress as
okay.
soon as we can.
Okay. And I think a lot of the things that Robin discussed about being much more structured and formatted in those steps would be very appropriate for us to be able to say... We got A through Z with various forms of cost for implementation, various forms of potential revenue generation. But I do think in the context of when we talk about promoting small-scale agriculture, I think we should be looking at not necessarily market rates, subsidized market rates, but giving people who don't have the land at this moment but are thinking about the business an opportunity, and if the land is not being utilized right now, we put it into use.
And that's certainly something that a path is available. We go through the farm use proposal process. Someone wants to propose.
Well, I guess it'd be nice to know what that criteria is then, because. I guess I would be surprised to hear that there's nobody interested as opposed to they didn't meet the criteria.
There's a questionnaire that goes through a number of points that is then looked at by the Farm Advisory Committee for consistency with
the guiding
principles. Can you send that out
to us, please?
Huh?
Can you send the questionnaire out to us?
Sure. You can send the proposal form to folks.
Great.
It's also on our website, but I'll get
it. Do you have something
yes.
else?
Yes, I have another topic.
Oh.
It's going to be brief. You're going to love it. I just wanted to give you an update. We had a work session with council yesterday on the potential update of the marijuana facilities code, and they gave us...
We're done.
That's all organic, I believe, would be organic.
Yeah.
So they had asked a series of questions for us to respond to, looking at the the hours of operation. Currently, our code has an 8 to 8 p.m. The state WAC is 8 to midnight. City of Vancouver is 8 to 11 p.m. So they wanted to see about potentially amending that. Also, the way the distance is measured, there's a 1,000-foot area that you can't site a facility if it's near a park, schools. There's a list of 8 items that the state has, and when we adopted the code.
Is this the code that we recommended a long time
2014,
ago?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And it didn't really get implemented because they weren't allowing it at all.
It got adopted, but then they prohibited the use in all zones.
Right, okay.
And so,
they're talking about.
We recommended some code that they said, well, we're going to, just in case they decide they want to allow it.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is we're getting close to in case.
The code that isn't implemented.
Okay.
Yes.
And so I think that was before most of us were on the Planning Commission. So do they want to bring that back to us? Or, I mean, they could probably just, do they need to bring these minor changes back to us?
Yes.
Minor change of allowing something that was prohibited.
That's
really the question.
Just asking us,
yeah.
If they allowed it, what code would we recommend?
Yeah. Right. So since you last saw it, there have been some changes in the state standard that would need to be updated, and then if there's a desire or direction to consider changing the prohibition, that would clearly come before you.
I don't think they asked us the first time about whether or not it was going to be prohibited. I don't remember voting on that. They just said if we decide to allow it, what regulations is it?
Right. We put in the land use policies with the code about operations.
Right.
So they're going to ask us what we think about whether or not they should allow it in the first place.
No. No, they want us to.
Yes.
Yes.
Because
they didn't.
Really?
Also,
they're going to ask us whether or not.
You get to make a recommendation.
One of the possible changes
yes.
would be to look at the use table and change those X's to T's or C's.
Okay. All right.
So that is absolutely something that's on the
table. When are they going to bring that to us?
We're going to try to have.
That'll be an exciting hearing.
Well. We're going to have a council time. We're going to try to go to council time with the responses to the questions they had next week. There's some interest in doing this in an expeditious manner. So June might be a time that comes before you. When exactly, we're not clear, and we'll have a better sense after next week.
Are the regs parallel to the alcohol regs, or are they a little bit stricter?
They're different.
And there's the Washington Liquor and Cannabis Board is what they're called now that issues those regs. That's your update.
Okay,
$500,000
a year.
Easy.
That means it's paid for.
I'm not sure it's actually an incubator situation.
Yeah, you get a lot of incubator guys.
Oh, yeah. Just not for comment. Unless we offer it. Typically, it's not for comment. And, you know, if it's an applicant that's going to try to sell us on something, it might have to be so keen on it. Save it from hearing.
Yeah.
When it's the youth of our society interested in big issues, I mean, I decided to come and.
High five to
Ross. Yeah.
Kind of
obvious.
Well, it's obvious. I kind of said the same thing, but he
somebody
said
cares
her entrance into all of this.
Eloquent.
She had no idea. What? I can't talk?
Very nicely done, Robin.
All right, so are we adjourned?
We done?
All right.